be rocking over that bass treble. I'ma be chilling with my motherfucker crew. I'ma be making all them girls you wanna do. I'ma be up in that A-list flicks, doing one-handed flicks, and I'ma be sipping.
Hello, my name is Tom Taylor. Yeah, you are listening to the Quarter to Three Movie Podcast. We're gonna get down.
Tom, you're so street.
I am so street. We are gonna
wait on that
salt this week. Also so street.
A white seasoning.
What's wrong with black-eyed peas? What's the matter with you guys?
Turkeys. Not white enough.
Wait. Were we supposed to see that Step Up movie?
Oh, I would. Yes.
That's not out yet, is it?
Yeah, I can't wait. It's out. So, by the way, as I mentioned, I am Tom Chick. That was Christian Milkowski. Did I get that right?
Actually, you should refer to me as Geronimo for this podcast.
Let's go with Dingus. That's Latin for Geronimo. We also have with us Kelly Wand. Kelly Wand, while you were watching Salt, did any taglines pop into your head that might work?
Yeah. Yeah, one did. It's, in Russia, President Snipe Assassins.
Now, that's kind of a spoiler. Why don't you tell us what happened in Salt? Can you break down the plot of the movie?
Oh, you mean a Salnopsis?
How about a Saltnopsis? Yes, give us what you got.
All right. This one's endless, dude. Maybe you should do audio cues.
I'll go make a sandwich.
All right. Okay, so the North Koreans are water torturing this hot blonde CIA agent, Evelyn Salt, that she's an Oscar-winning actress. Or maybe she just tells them she's a Russian spy, so they go, cool, kill Whitey, and release her back to the U.S. so she could start a nuclear war. So her husband's German, and he doesn't like it safe, and she's attracted to him because he's into spiders, and he keeps them in their apartment. So she goes to work, and they capture a Russian guy named Orlov, but he outs her as a Russian spy, and then he easily breaks out of this heavily guarded CIA facility in some way we never see, and then she breaks out by making a rocket out of pop rocks and a bong. So, thanks, Dingus. I prefer that to Tom's respectful silence.
I'm enjoying it. I don't want to interrupt.
All right. That's flattering and not true. So
and
she figures out their... Right.
So really pop rocks, bong. Go ahead.
I have to start rewriting these a little before it goes onto the internet forever. So she figures out they're going to kill the Russian president. So she saves the day by poisoning him instead. And then she gets captured like 30 times, and the cops keep going, okay, forget the last 12 hours and the 29 last fuck-ups. This time, we'll just stick to the cuffs and the seatbelt. We got this. And then the Russians kill her husband on a battleship to make sure she's loyal and won't kill them all. So out of revenge for this, she kills them all. Then she sneaks into the nuclear command center disguised as Rob Lowe. Or Schneider, because she's short, with a friend that she went to parkour school with, who has a scar on his face that he got from taking this math test. I like that line. You suck, Dingus. So the scar guy says he's going home. So
trying to be respectful.
I appreciate that. So he blows himself up because that's where his home is, and then leaves Schreiber. Salt's old partner turns out to be another Russian, but she didn't know this for 30 years because he was in the class ahead of her. And he makes the president, who's white, even though it's 2011, start a nuclear war with the Muslims by shooting everybody in the command center. And he uses the president's handprint on the nuclear war starting machine. But then Salt shows up, but the glass is bulletproof, so she shoots the 12-inch thick concrete where they keep the door hot wiring machine, and Lee Schreiber lurks in wait beside the door instead of in front of it. So she uses her run past the Lee Schreiber powers and kills him on the crowded staircase room without anyone shooting at her, even though everyone thinks she just tried to start a nuclear war. And then the guy from Red Belt punches her in the helicopter. But she's all, dude, so he's all, yeah. And then he saves her life by kicking her into the Potomac. Is that how you say that? and initiating an international woman hunt for her. And then the president wakes up, and he and the Russian president confer and go, oh, wait, she didn't kill us? But then everyone goes, shut up, the movie's over. And then Jason Bourne's all, okay, I'm back from vacation. What did I miss?
I was in the water, too.
Yeah. See, it's a perfect lead-in.
So I just want to say I hated this movie, but I so look forward to Kelly Wand, you doing that. Like I just what makes movies like this worth seeing is hearing you sort of recount what I just watched. That was beautiful, Kelly Wand.
That took forever.
Thank you so much, Kelly Wand. This movie was so entirely joyless until
I liked it. You guys suck.
Now you're just griefing us.
No, it's all right.
Like Night and Day and A-Team. Really?
No. Okay. Yeah, I like this better. I'm surprised you guys didn't like your Philip Noyce, because you guys are huge Philip Noycers.
Man, you'd never know this is him. Well, you know what? That's not true. He's done a bunch of those, like, Tom Clancy kind of movies.
And The Saint, everyone's favorite Tom
Clancy. Oh, the Val Kilmer vehicle. That's right. I forgot
it. The one where he goes, hi, I'm Hans von Flissetrissens or something.
Isn't there a female scientist? Like, isn't Denise Richardson, like, a nuclear physicist?
That's not her name. It's the Denise Richardson.
It's in the Denise Richardson.
Is there an implausible female scientist in The Saint, though? I could be wrong.
Is it Elizabeth Shue, or am I an idiot?
I think you're right.
Are those mutually exclusive? Yeah, I was right. I'm a genius for knowing who the girl is in The Saint. I like the movie way more than you guys did, but I so needed the R rating, like more even than Toy Story 3.
I'm not sure that would have helped. I mean, I agree that it seemed awfully conspicuously PG-13 at times, but I just can't see an R.
I liked her character. I liked that she saved her dog. That meant a lot to me. You heartless bastards.
I thought you hated when dogs are in movies, though. You're okay with this dog being saved?
They usually exist to die or to get in jeopardy in some stupid way, like Independence Day. But in this, it was just like, although it was kind of a tip-off that she was a good guy, that she saves her dog. Like, an evil woman wouldn't have done that, right?
I doubt any of those Russian spies who were recently arrested saved their dogs.
It taps into our distrust of Liev Schreiber.
You know, I got to say, we've talked before about spoiler casting in movies, and I kind of feel that Liev Schreiber, if they ever want us to think he's a good guy again, it's not really going to work.
When has he ever been a good guy? Ever?
He was in some movie with Jamie Bell and Daniel Craig about noble Jews. What the heck was
in
that?
In The Omen, he's the father of Satan, so I guess he's not a bit.
That's right, the Omen remake, and he's Julia Stiles' husband. No, he plays good guys sometimes, but in a movie like this, he's always the guy who it turns out to be is the bad guy. And it was definitely spoiler casting for me. Like halfway through, I'm like, oh, okay. EG4 is going to be the guy with integrity, and he's going to be the even more
slack
Russian.
I got all the twists in the movie because they weren't that unpredictable, but I kind of didn't mind it. Like, I got him, like, 5 minutes ahead of time, which made me go, oh, that's okay. That's a lot later than I normally get him.
And when you say twists, like, what twists exactly work for you?
Okay,
go ahead.
When she shoots the Russian president, I was surprised.
Oh, good Lord. But it didn't tip its hand. I mean, the fact that we see spiders on his desk, I'm like, oh, there's going to be some stupid spider venom subplot. That you didn't see that coming?
You guys aren't high enough when you see movies. That's a problem. But it's,
go ahead.
Okay, yeah.
Well, Dingus,
why don't you guys ruin the movie for me?
Let's see if we can change your mind. Dingus, were there any twists that worked for you?
I don't see them, you know,
as twists.
I don't know. They're not really twists in this kind of movie. You know that a double cross is coming. You're just waiting for it, you know. When she shows up on Staten Island dressed as a Russian princess, which is just awesome. Her costume is just awesome there. Hello, I'm Russian. Can anybody see me? I'm Russian. And when they're driving her out to the barge, I'm just sitting there going, okay, when's the double cross and when's the next double cross after that? I don't know. You know she's got to turn out to be good because they just can't have a major action star in an American movie be bad, apparently.
Well, the no way out clause has expired.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're just waiting for when that moment comes. And you're right about Liev Schreiber. You know, he's going to turn out to be, although I sort of held hope that I'm never going to be able to say his name. Chiwetel Ejiofor?
Chiwetel Ejiofor, I believe.
Thank
racist.
You. I held out hope that he might turn out to be, like, the final bad guy.
Yeah, I thought that
too. I thought it was so amusing watching him smack her in that helicopter, because he just looked so unconvincing as this tough guy smacking her, which is what he was supposed to look like. And I loved that. I loved him, like, whacking her upside the head, and he just doesn't look tough at all. It made me very happy. But I didn't really think that there were any twists or anything. And that, you know, I liked her. I mean, she doesn't really do it for me.
She doesn't do it for me either, but I really like her character and her acting. Like, she's a good action heroine.
She wasn't that convincing to me in this. She looked awfully waifish.
She like Wanted? Was she the Wanted?
I thought she was far more effective in Wanted, where she looked tough. I mean, here trying to play this woman who's undergone the transformation to the domestic side, it just seems far too effective on that level. I never bought that she was like super badass action hero, partly because she seemed really thin. And kind of spidery. Like, if this had been like an Aeon Flux movie or something, I might have bought it. But since it was supposed to be sort of quasi-realistic-ish.
But Thurman's thin in Kill Bill, do you consider that?
Kill Bill's well stylized, though. Like, this didn't seem to be going for that stylized.
It was trying for realism.
It was trying for a Bourne Identity kind of realism. And the fight scenes, I thought, were actually pretty bad in that it seemed to me there was a lot of shoving instead of hitting.
That's because it didn't have the R rating, and no one could stab anyone on screen.
No, regardless of the stabbing, like, when she's supposed to, like, punch someone or, you know, do a karate chop to a neck or whatever kind of fight choreography there was, it just seemed more like stuntmen waiting to be shoved. I just thought the fight choreography was terrible.
You know, I think they actually used the PG-13 to their advantage in that case, because although we didn't really see that there was any twist in her turning out to be good, if you look through, and I was talking to a friend of mine about this today, if you look through all of her fights going down to the bunker of the White House, I guess she doesn't really kill anybody. You know,
she kills Rush. Only the bad.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. When she kills somebody, it's obvious. But in all of these fights, these things could be lethal blows. You know, she's cracking guys' backs and whatnot and shoving them. But there's no evidence that she's killed anybody. And then you can work your way back through that and go, there isn't so much bloodshed as I thought there was. So I I'm willing to give it a little bit of a pass on the PG-13 there. But boy, things have changed since something like Patriot Games, which was a flat out R. And that was that was supposed to be, you know, this level of movie, and we can't have that anymore.
Are the Bourne movies R?
I don't recall. And, you know, that's the other thing, Tom, and I'm glad we're all talking about the Bourne movies, because I just kept thinking as I was going over this movie how joyless it was and how grim.
Yeah.
And it's not like the Bourne identities are full of happy-go-lucky humor, but there's a sense of discovery that he's going through, or self-discovery, that is enjoyable. And there was none of that here. There's just this sort of grim sort of I didn't know, is she discovering who she is? No, she knows who she is. She's just going through the paces.
Well, what it is, Dingus, the formula was intriguing to me at first, but eventually got irritating. It's that we, the audience, don't know. She knows her past. She knows everything that's going on. But it dumps her into the action. And then as she remembers, as she's sort of musing over things, we're made privy to what she knows and what she remembers and why she's married to Mike and all of this background stuff. So at first I was a little intrigued by that approach. You know, don't let the audience know what the characters know. Dump them into the action, and then during quiet moments, sort of give the audience a clue at a time. Now, in the Bourne Identity movies, that's all mirroring his progression as well. Here, it's just a sort of a narrative trick, which at first I kind of liked, but when I realized there wasn't really anything in store, like I didn't really care about the story that much. There wasn't much to it. I didn't feel there was any need to sort of tease it out like that. I didn't get any things to use the word joyless, and I agree, because I didn't get any sort of sense of discovery, or I never really felt like, oh, yeah, now I get it. There was no sense. Yeah, there's just no sense of discovery for me here.
I like the parts with her face. That's when the movie's really, yeah, the close-ups are good.
Well, the one place where I thought, okay, this could have been a cool movie is where her husband gets shot right in front of her, and she has to revise everything and not react. Because
right.
You know, normally in a movie, that's where the character breaks down and then kicks ass or whatever, or gets captured.
Just to wait like 90 seconds, it's excruciating.
That was a great sequence that I would have liked in a better movie, and she can do that. I mean, Angelina Jolie is a good actress, and I really like her, and the movie trusted her face in that sequence right there. And that's rare. I appreciated that. So, yeah,
I loved her face. I loved her face when in the explosion, when the Russian president is falling through the floor and all that debris is falling, and she's turned from the camera and she's almost bored. She's so stoic. And I actually loved that moment where she's just all business. And you're right. It works for her face.
Yeah. See? I win. Best movie ever. But I think that's what was working for me is like the memory thing is dumb, but it's because she's looking convincingly enigmatic in all the close. Yeah, okay. I don't need to know what she is yet.
Kelly, she's
thinking about what she's doing or something.
Look right. That's like the opposite of dramatic irony if the character knows and you don't.
Well, there's a lot of movies like that. Like in No Way Out, we don't know what he is till the end of the movie. And yeah. A lot of people hate that ending, and with reason.
No Way Out and A Murder Mystery, those kinds of movies have a twist up their sleeve. They really can promise this sense of revelation or an aha moment. And I didn't feel like anything like that was waiting for us here.
The twist was it was all a dream.
Well, it really was. Like that spider thing, I just felt that was so chintzy and such
it was rushed.
It felt rushed. It felt rushed. And at first, I even wrote in my notes that the movie, and I don't know why I thought this, because it was after she had made a rocket launcher out of cleaning products, but when she's jumping around on top of trucks.
Bong and bong trucks.
But by the way, I just want to point out, those aren't any cleaning products. Those were CIA cleaning products.
Right. See?
That's not Kirkland. They're not using Kirkland.
She stashed them there.
But I wrote in my notes that it wasn't quite over the top. It was against the top. But that's totally falls through. I mean, as the movie goes on, it completely goes over the top. It becomes sort of implausible and silly. And just the whole thing with, like, poisoning the Russian prime minister so that it looks like he's dead and how he conveniently wakes up right before Liev Schreiber's going to let her into the bunker.
They don't know he's alive for days. And then they go, oh.
Yeah, Charlie the Bunker got the CNN feed playing in the background right at that moment. Here's one thing, too. Jumping down the elevator shaft, chasing the elevator, that wirework stuff just looked silly. I mean, at points he was kind of quasi-superhuman, and at other points it was kind of, like, vaguely realistic. And
how Russians train people, vaguely realistically.
using the taser to drive, for instance, when she's in the
and she's using
taser
tasers
to shock
make you drive
foot.
Fast. That's awesome.
Whether
right.
it's it's like she's shocking his foot, so he presses down the accelerator or the brake or whatever. That was just like goofy. Like that would have worked in a book movie, but I don't know.
I agree with you, but her face sold it for me. Like she looked so busy. All right, I got a taser. Left turn. Like. Her acting sold that for me.
Well, let me tell you what sold that sequence for me, and I don't think it was her acting. I think she can sell pretty much anything if the movie trusts her. Wanted and Mr. and Mrs. Smith, I'm no fan of those movies, but she sells what she's trying to sell in those movies. What made that scene work for me, Kelly Wand, is I really appreciated the fact that most of the camera work, or there was significant camera work done from the interior of that car. That was a cool directorial choice during the sequence where she's escaping from the police. And I feel there were a few times where Philip Noyce had some cool twist or perspective on an action sequence, and that was one of them. You know, let's shoot a lot of this escape from the inside of this police SUV. But then the silly taser thing kind of put it at a whole new level, and I feel like it just didn't work ultimately.
Well, maybe coming off Predators made me like Inception more than I should have, and then maybe Inception's incomprehensible action sequences made me like these because I understood at least what was going on in these.
You need a palate cleanser before
everything. Maybe, yeah.
Well, what ruined that sequence you're talking about for me, because there are things I liked about that tasers make you go real fast sequence. Namely, that it called to mind the chase in the famous chase in the Bourne movie. Is it Supremacy?
Supremacy.
Yeah, that just feels, you can just feel the impact, and the sound is cranked up so much on this and that one that I just referred to. You can feel the impact of the cars, and I like that. But what ruins this for me is that I essentially saw the same type of sequence in Night and Day, and this is going to drive you crazy, Kelly Wand. And the humor in that sequence of watching Cameron Diaz essentially have to do the same thing Angelina Jolie does, which is drive over a dead body, but being encouraged by Tom Cruise on the hood, that so delighted me. And there was none of that spark here. There was no spark, you know. Other, you know, I didn't mean to do a pun there with the, as far as tasers are concerned, but it feel like there was any life there. But I appreciate what you're saying about it being shot from inside the car, and that was fine. But you know, it just didn't do it for me.
I don't need joy in my movies, my action movies. She's a serious woman. She's got a lot on her mind. She's got to do a lot of stupid shit.
You know, since you said joy, Kelly Wand, I thought your tagline this week was going to be utilitarian is the new sexy.
Nice. All right, whoever is doing that, all right, that's it. I'm cutting your microphone, Kelly Wand.
What?
Jeez, Pete, we're doing morning radio, morning zoo sound effects. That's great. Lovely.
I'm trying to expand the demographics beyond just nerds.
Please don't. Good Lord. I'd like to apologize to everyone for that.
Inappropriate. Racist.
Go ahead. What else do you got for us sound effect-wise, Kelly Wand? You might as well go ahead and just get them out of the way. Let's hear them.
Yeah, get your panties off the camera while you're at it.
I got the bong lighting. Oh, I broke it again. Damn it.
There were a couple of moments I did like, though. There's a little a bit of a broken expectation for me when she dashes down into the metro. Because I was expecting that subway, you know, sliding doors kind of moment, and she just dashes down in the metro and then pops up across the street. I kind of liked that. That was cute.
She has to get under the, and look what she has to do. She has to go right to the place and then, see? Secret Service apparently is really incompetent. That's the moral of the movie. It's because of the economy, though. They can't afford to pay the Secret Service.
They also can't afford a decent president.
Oh my God! I wrote in my notes that dude is president.
Yeah,
I could not. There were a couple of instances of weird casting, and the first one was that president guy. Oh my God, he was horrible. Now, when he got up to just speak, I was like, wow, okay, that's all we're gonna see of him. But then later on, when you go to the White House, I was like, oh my God, that's who you picked for your president, Philip Noyce. So this dude's name, I had to look him up. First
I love
of all,
his name. I love his name.
Hunt Block.
Wait, say it again.
Hunt Block.
Hunt Block.
That's the actor's name. Now, the president's name, by the way, Howard Lewis, that's bad enough. That's his character's name, President Howard Lewis.
President Howard Lewis.
But the actor's name is Hunt Block, and I looked him up. He's like
a better president name.
You know what? I would have gone with that, yeah. He's like some guy from, literally, he's got like dozens of episodes of Guiding Light and As the World Turns. On his
That is a perfect soap opera star name, Hunt Block.
And awesome. And soap opera star face, too. Just what an inconsequential looking president. Oh, that was just terrible.
I did love how scared shitless he looked for most of the movie. I liked that choice in a way that he just looks scared the whole time. But he's so, you know, as soon as you see the name Hunt Block, you know.
Yeah. And that's the guy we're rooting for to keep running the country with Salt's help after the movie ends. Like, yeah, all right, everything's fine now. That guy's still president, that idiot who just got shot up to death.
And the thing is, you can have a scared president, like Donald Pleasance in Escape from New York, for instance. There's a
number one
president for you. Exactly, a number one. A president who flips out by the time it's over. But this guy
was a wig.
Oh, I just hated that guy. So here's another bit of weird casting. The husband, which I think I kind of appreciated, but most of the movie I was like, wait a minute, that dude got Angelina Jolie?
Well, we don't know how, but that's okay. Because he's German.
He got her by putting King Kong on his forehead. That's how he got her.
She's a woman of substance. She goes out with a douche, you know.
Well, I think what they were going for is this idea that because he hunted her, like she eventually was with him just to use him to get into North Korea. She gets captured, and once he shows up, and once he sort of persists in trying to rescue her, she falls in love with him from that. I mean, I think that's what they were going for. They didn't really show it. I wish they had, they sort of hinted at it, and if they'd pushed it more, I think it would have made that moment where he gets shot a little more effective. But I think that's what they were going for, is he was an unconventional, he wasn't just like handsome, hunky dude. And
I thought they were going for a red herring, and I thought we were supposed to go, oh, he's German, he's one of them. He's
maybe, maybe. And Dingus, explain your comment, because that was a little cool detail. I knew I recognized him from somewhere. Explain where we know that actor from.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry about that. We know him from, he's one of the German dudes in Glorious Bastards.
I just one of the German dudes.
Got an important part.
You go ahead. Which one?
He's got that great monologue about King Kong representing the American Negro. He outs Michael Fassbender and all of the undercover guys in the inn, which is one of the great sequences in Inglourious Basterds. That actor is the, I guess he's a Gestapo officer or something like that. And he's from there. I recognized him from that.
So now he's two for two as German guys who get shot. Like now that's wow, he really falls over really well.
And then I thought this is just something funny. I don't think it really happened. I think I was dreaming it, but I thought I saw Andre Brouwer very briefly. But
I don't know. Poor Andre Brouwer. Man.
No, the mist. That put him back on the map.
God, Mist and Poseidon, that's right.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how bad I feel seeing him. I mean, I love that guy. He was, for a while, he was one of my favorite actors. You know, when he was in Homicide, there was nobody I liked more than him. He was just a great actor. He just had such a presence and a power, and then he shows up in this kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. I've just appreciated him recently in Men of a Certain Age with Scott Bakula and Ray Romano. He's great in that.
Ugh.
Why are you going, ugh?
Ray Romano?
No, Ray Romano. I mean, it's not comedy. Men of a Certain Age is great.
I think I'm too young for that show. It's in about old men. Neighbors,
okay, when you watch it, I want you to call on this podcast and say, Tom, you were right, I was wrong.
Rescue Me is too womanly for me. It's all about chicks, that show. All right. But getting back to this movie about chicks that we just...
Is it too much for me to ask somebody to explain the ending of this movie to me? Because it was ruined for me by my stupid-ass audience.
Which part?
I'm sort of confused as to why she's gone through all this, because I missed a lot of the dialogue in the chopper at the end.
Wait, why did you miss the dialogue? What did your audience do?
Yeah, let's hear what they said.
I had the worst. I've never had a worse audience at an ArcLight show than this one. Usually they police it up, but this one was bad. I had a bunch of little kids sitting next to me at a 10:30 at night show for this movie. I mean, I'm talking about 4-year-old children. And while they came in late, they came in during the middle of the torture scene. So the kids get ushered in to watch her being waterboarded or having gasoline.
I'd expect that from 2-year-olds.
By and large, they were okay. But then somebody down the row was videotaping or something, or they had a small fan operating. It was weird.
What?
For the whole film, there was like this weird fan noise going on, and I thought maybe somebody's hearing aid was freaking out, but then this friend of mine said it might have been somebody videotaping. And then in that scene I'm talking about, there was all this going on, and this somebody's cell phone in a purse playing playing the tune on and on and on, until I finally had to say, will you turn off your cell phone? And so I missed most of this sort of what she's talking about. I heard her say something like, they took everything from me, but I don't really get.
Then she goes, I'll kill them all. You let me go.
Yeah, she's going to hunt down the rest of the sleeper agents.
And then he's all, she's the Vic Mackey of the espionage world. So I'll cut
That's her plea to him? She's just saying, let me be your weapon or something?
Basically, yeah. It's so that the. And then the. It's like this.
I guess she doesn't care about her dog.
Well, her neighbor has the dog.
Forever?
The little girl, sure, yeah. She left her money for food.
That's not loving her pet. That's leaving your pet.
Philip Noyce can't really be trusted with dogs. That's what I liked. I loved that when the dog's following her through the apartment. I loved the dog angle.
That was a great dog cam shot. Yeah, I loved that too.
Well, I'd hope they're saying, oh yeah, it's sequel. That's set for a sequel, and I'm like, no, she just kills them all at the end of the movie. I liked it, but that's the end. I don't know.
But I think I can see them thinking franchise potential.
Yeah, exactly. Like very borny. Yeah.
Does everything got to be the same? Really? We got to have an Angelina Jolie Born franchise too. Like it's got to be the exact same thing as Born.
I think that's what they're hoping for.
Until they reboot Born. I mean, everything's either rebooted or franchised, and so the next one will be like Salt and Pepper.
But why is it all got to be the same franchise? Like, why is Star Trek got to be Star Wars? Like, why?
Kelly, do you need us to explain Hollywood to you? We can.
No, I just, it's a rhetorical question.
Ah, I see. I didn't realize that. No, I agree. No, you're right.
So why does she actually turn around and become, and not do what she's supposed to do? Is it because they took everything from her? Is the clue there, or is it?
She's wanting to leave all that and just live a domestic life. And it's only when she realizes that her handler has showed up and outed her and found her out that they've kidnapped her husband, so that she will indeed do her assassination mission. So she has
a handler.
Hey, good one. Do you have a rim shot on your sound effects board there, Kelly Wand?
No, that would be cheesy and lame. That's not my role.
So because she knows that her husband will be held until she does this, she has to fake doing it, then rescue her husband, and then they're going to go and live her life. But her husband gets killed in front of her eyes, so her new
Just
mission...
Just like Bourne's wife, girlfriend. Same thing.
So, but unlike Bourne, her new mission is to just kill them all. You know, Bourne struggles with where do I go from here. She has no compunction about that. She's just going to kill them all, out all of the secret agents or whatnot, and get revenge, I guess.
Yeah, because they are worse than her CIA bosses, and the CIA is awesome, and the U.S. rules. go on.
Well, I was a little puzzled by what exactly the scheme was going to be here, because I remember thinking, well, if they just want to kill the president,
right,
the guy who's going home, you know, he could have done that. That's stupid. But then I realized, you know, when we have Schreiber's monologuing, their plot, this is great, their plot is to enrage a billion Muslims. And yeah. I remember thinking, well, yeah, the Bush administration kind of took care of that.
Yeah, right.
Go home now.
We need to have two people in custody break out. That's an easier way than just what we've already done before the movie takes place. And this is next year. It could have been like a green zone. It could have been a flashback like to how we put it.
Don't you have to kill the president if you're Liev Schreiber? I mean, don't you have to do that?
Maybe he was dead. That would have been a better ending. Because the vice president's dead, too, so then it's like, it's Salt. Salt's like the 90th in line. It's like King Ralph.
Vice president, great name, by the way, Vice President Maxwell Oates.
Very good, Dingus. That's good. What was the Speaker of the House's name in this fictional universe?
I don't know, but this movie has probably my favorite bar name of any movie.
What was the bar?
She ducks into this weird bar. To put tampons on her gunshot wound. It's called Jugs and Strokers.
Yeah, Jugs and Strokers. There's your joy. That's some joy.
It's that movie about Roxanne Welch driving an ambulance, isn't it?
Phil Cosby, yeah.
Nice.
My audience cheered when she killed Liev, by the way. And I was thinking, see if it was R, she could saw through his neck and then go down.
My audience giggled a little bit, actually.
Really?
I actually loved that move. Although why she has suddenly, she's got a biker's wallet for handcuffs, I don't know. But my audience, she goes over and they're like, whoa! And then she does this weird sort of, I don't know, winged victory kind of move where she's just like, ugh! And my audience started giggling.
Because they learned from Oswald to teach their trainees that. Because they go, yeah, Jack Ruby, you got to be ready.
Oh, I love how that Oswald thing just sort of snuck by.
Yeah. Come on. You guys suck for not loving this movie and its dumbness.
That was great. Yeah, you know, that's true, actually. He goes through that whole spiel where he's telling her the story. Mm-hmm. And I got a little distracted by the board games and the Brady Bunch, and the feeling that all of that, those Russian kids in training could have, if, with just a little bit of a nudge, been a Wes Anderson film. I got a little distracted by that, but at the end of his whole story, she just goes, "You're killing me here, man."
Love that. That's good. That's really good.
And something like, when does the magic, when does the good fairy show up, or something like that. I did, yeah, okay, I like those two little goofy moments when she's interrogating the man who she knows.
Maybe this movie needs to be seen a second time.
Ah. Yeah,
all the nuance.
You might have cracked this. That way I can find out what arachnologist means.
It's an Ariadne studier. Oh, God, he's still talking.
Did you guys like the moment where Tweedle Ejiofor picks up and examines a Russian doll?
See? When was that?
See? It's when they're in her apartment. You know, the flashbangs have blown out all the windows, which was kind of a cool touch. I did like that. He conspicuously picks up a Russian doll that's on, like, the mantle. And, you know, he's facing the camera. It's a tight shot on him, and he's examining the Russian doll while he's talking, and then he puts it back down.
Oh, I thought he brought that in with him. That makes more sense your way. See, they let her out, though, because they blew the windows, and then she goes out the window.
I did. I mean, that's early on. Like, I was still kind of on board with the movie. Like, I liked, you know, I liked some of those early, the way those early chases unfolded. Yeah.
And then she bothered the kid and got let in, like your favorite movie, Charlie's Angels, which also opened in North Korea, Full Throttle.
Very good, Kelly Wand. Very good.
Kevin Bacon's in all those movies.
That's a great 3x3, movies that open in North Korea. I like that.
Movies with Kevin Bacon. I'm sad you guys didn't like Saltmore. Very upset at you. Very upset about this. Because I finally liked the movie. It's the first movie I've liked all summer, you bastards.
Now,
finally, I like a stupid action movie. You guys are the stupid. Well, Tom Moore, Dingus is.
See, here though, Philip Noyce knows stupid action movies because he did one of the quintessential stupid action movies of all time, and it's called Blind Fury with Rutger Hauer.
Yeah, it's a great
Blind
movie.
And I would expect the guy who made Blind Fury would be able to handle this kind of material a little better.
That was Philip Noyce.
Yeah, how about that?
Wow, that's awesome. He started out with Rutger.
He started out with Nicole Kidman.
Before Dead Calm?
Hang on. Oh.
So Dead Calm, Blind Fury, Rabbit Proof Fence, and Quiet American are the things that made me excited to see that this was, that this was directed by Philip Noyce. And I don't feel it showed a single sign of any of the great things from any of those movies, which is what really disappointed me. And it's also, the script is by the guy that did Equilibrium and I think Ultraviolet, if I'm not mistaken.
You're right.
The one with
The one with Mila Jovovich carrying around Cameron Bright in a suitcase.
he directed Equilibrium as well.
Kurt Vimmer did, right. The guy, Vimmer, yeah. Right. He directed Equilibrium and Ultraviolet, and those both were really stylish. And there was no sign of that stuff that Kurt Vimmer did, I felt, in this script. So I guess my expectations based on Philip Noyce and Kurt Vimmer were just a little bit higher than yours, Kelly Wand.
Mine were low because of Predators, Night and Day, Killers, which is way lamer than Night and Day. By the way, I like Night and Day now. Can we go back and do that podcast? Because the first 15 minutes of Killers annihilated me. So.
Kelly, that's awesome because as I was leaving the movie theater, I was walking behind these two guys, and one of them said, "That sure was fun," and the other one said, "Yeah, I expected so much less." That's so sweet. Because I had watched Dead Calm again, and I'd watched Patriot Games, which I quite like at least the first two-thirds of that, because I was a Tom Clancy fan in my youth.
And I
think the adaptation of Patriot Games that Philip Noyce does is quite good for most of the movie. And the action sequence where Jack Ryan saves the Royals from the Irish terrorists is a fantastic adaptation of a single scene. It's a sequence, I should say. It's wonderfully adapted. And I watched that scene again and again because it's a thrilling scene. And he does a wonderful job of capturing that book, which was a really difficult thing to do following up on The Hunt for Red October. And so I really had higher hopes because he has such a great, at least for me in my memory, of first seeing Dead Calm in a theater and then seeing Patriot Games in a theater. He's got a visual style that sort of sticks out for me. And I just didn't, you know, I was hoping that we'd kind of come back to that because there was so much money behind this movie.
At all.
Did he declare Present Danger?
Yeah, you're right. I think he did.
That has that really cool thing with the Humvees and that little corridor. That part's good, right? Never mind.
I remember nothing of that movie other than Willem Dafoe.
I don't remember him.
Oh, you guys are huge Tom Clancy fans. That's really cute.
He's no Clive Cussler.
How did you like Sahara, Kelly Wand?
Ugh. I don't read any Tom Clancy novels that aren't about submarines.
Did you guys like... Go ahead.
Nothing. That's stupid. Even for me.
Did you guys like the computer that first of all, times out the president's login? I like that. Like, if it's like when you're checking your email, and then you tab out to another window, and you tab back over, and it's like, oh, you have to sign in again. They did that with the whole nuclear launch computer. Mm-hmm. I like that.
And I like that it goes from 24% to 72% or something.
And it has an announcement over the loudspeakers when it hits 99%, but it's still going to hold and wait for confirmation, like this yes-no dialog box when it gets to the end where you have to hit a final button.
I don't remember that.
Whoever was designing the interface for the president's nuclear launch, I it's like they were using Windows 3.1 or something. The interface for nuclear launch was wretched.
And those key codes that they read, that was all automatic. Like, A, Alpha, Niner.
I didn't understand what that was. So it's like two people each have different codes. And they have to
but then the computer does both of them?
Doing one letter at a time, yeah.
I appreciated that they went through every one of those letters, though.
Am I stupid, or is Crimson Tide good in my memory, even though that has nothing to do with anything we're talking about? But just like as a nuclear war could happen, we gotta do something.
If you can stomach your Tony Scott, I think that's going to be about as good as it gets.
That's like the best Tony Scott movie, right?
Yeah, isn't it?
It's the best dog on a submarine movie.
See? I'm a dog apologist.
So what kind of dog was this little guy? Is this like was this a Wizard of Oz dog, this little fella?
It's Benji.
A Benji dog. Is Benji a Wizard of Oz dog?
Listen to yourself.
I'm just trying to... I don't know my dog nomenclature. I'm just trying to...
Why do you like Wanted so much? Wanted's not good except for her.
Oh, I don't. I don't like Wanted.
You said she's better... She's like... I think in Wanted she's kind of like tired because I read that she was a little bit in grief when the film...
Well, Wanted doesn't have to revolve around her. She has the advantage in Wanted of just hanging on the sidelines and looking cool. You know,
but it's boring without her. The plot's without drag.
Yeah, no, I agree. I definitely agree. But I thought she was a more convincing action heroine in Wanted than in this.
She's R-rated. There you go, because she gets to shoot people. While in this, she can't shoot anybody. She has to, like, get by running.
Also in this, I was really disturbed. I thought it was seriously freaky. It was like the Wayans brothers playing white people. When she did the Dude Jolie outfit, like that, you called it Rob Schneider or Rob Lowe, Kelly Wand. That was right on the money, and I found that very, very disturbing. And that, if for no other reason, I think the movie should have gotten an R rating for that.
Were you disturbed at it because you were suddenly finally attracted to her?
Was that enough? Was that enough about Saul?
Is there more? We did 45 minutes. Is there more to say?
We can talk about Inception forever.
Yeah, if we're at the point of talking whether or not we're sexually aroused by Angelina Jolie dressed as a man, I think we've blown our wad.
As it were. Well said, Tom.
Let's do a 3x3.
Yeah, forget what we're talking about.
I like that we're disagreeing. I thought it was just going to be all summer of us just all saying, yeah, that was great, or yeah, that
I know we're all going to agree because you're liking a bunch of really bad action movies.
I know. We're sorry to disappoint you. Yeah.
No, it's more fun.
Yep.
It would have been really boring without me being stupid.
Can't wait.
That was a great tagline.
Yeah. That blew a 10-second conversation into 50 minutes. And you're going, no. It's supposed to be like that. Dumb is funny. What do you mean joyless?
All right, now we've ruined. You don't have to listen to
Yeah. It's not spoilery, but how did Salt do this weekend, by the way? Did it do well?
It barely lost to Inception.
Uh-huh. How much did it make?
36.
Oh, yeah, there's not going
to be. I don't like talking about this stuff. I think it's lame. I think people, they and then you read those Hollywood Reporter articles where they talk about the Cume. They go to the Cume, and they use all this little jargon to talk about how much movies made instead of talking about if they're good. I hate that.
Well, it's just the business side, but still, I think that means
there should be no gossip about famous people's lives and no talk about box office in my universe, in my utopia. That's it. Only about quality.
Sorry I brought it up then. I was just curious.
You spend a lot of time at Ain't It Cool News, do you, Kelly?
Ew, God.
But you know what this means, Kelly Wand, is from now, if it only made 36, if it got beat by Inception, I am guessing that from here on out, Salt 2 will only be remembered as the disarmament talks. Not a secret. There you go. Dingus, what's
our people would rather have been confused by Inception than, like, watch Angelina Jolie dressed as a man. That's what we learned. Okay, sorry, go on.
Feeling a little oogie about that now, yeah. It's just weird. Dingus, give us a 3x3.
All right, this week's 3x3, your top three trapped underwater moments.
It's kind of specific of you.
Yes, traps. Well, what's a moment?
It wasn't loose and sloppy.
All right, well, I go first since I'm introducing next week's 3x3. And I'm going
to spoil mine. I don't want you to spoil mine. So you don't get to go first.
Sorry, but that's the way it shakes out. The number three I'm going to pick is the one that I think everybody thinks of, and that's the scene in the submarine in Abyss where Ed Harris has to persuade Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio, or actually it's the other way around. She has to say, look, you have to drown me and carry me back because you can swim better and then revive me. Just that moment of them saying goodbye. I didn't care for the Abyss, by the way. I'm not an Abyss apologist. I feel it's a really weak, it's minor Cameron, which is, the man's, he's made a whole career of minor works, I think, that do very well. The Abyss isn't, I'm not a fan of it. I would rank it somewhere maybe slightly above T2.
And Avatar.
Oh, way above Avatar. but the Abyss really comes alive, though, at this one single moment, because both of them are tremendous actors, and they really sell the scene and the danger in the scene. As far as I'm concerned, the movie, that's the fulcrum of the movie. Everything before and after, everything leading up to it's important. And there's that scene, they get her back, they revive her, and then you can just leave after that. So that's my number three, is the scene in the crashed submarine in Abyss.
Who goes next?
Well, first of all, I thought you had taken that off the table last week in your little cryptic.
I'm not the one in charge of the 3x3. You are. If something has to be taken off the table, Dingus.
It's always Dingus. That,
right. Well, it's always the guy who's, because I'm going to take a couple off the table for mine today, but it's always the onus rests on the guy who's doing the 3x3.
She's not trapped.
They both are.
Oh.
I love that scene because it has one of my favorite lines of any of these scenes. I just love the line, we breathe water for 9 months, your body will remember.
Yeah. And then they kill
him. Such a great goofy moment. I love that.
Is that true?
That we breathe water for 9 months?
Yeah, is there like...
Don't they really drown that poor little rat in some sort of breathable fluid?
But it turns out okay. It lives. According to the special effects and the rat they pulled out in the second cut.
But is that true, though? They really, isn't that, or is that just some urban legend about the movie? Don't they really?
I don't know.
Stick a rat in fluid until it breaks?
They do it on screen, but I don't know if they actually killed a rat. It looks dead for a minute.
Well, no, they don't kill it. Dingus, clear this up.
Yeah, but is that based on any real science?
Yeah, because they actually do it to the rat, don't they?
What?
I have no idea.
Is there a real fluid? Hey, 2:45 smarter people than us.
There is.
We really breathe fluid for 9 months?
Well, it's called when you're in the womb.
Yeah.
You have gills.
Amniotic fluid, right. But not for 9 months. We don't have them like in the 8-month age, do we? I know we have fur. I read that on a lycanthropy site. Wait.
Stop clicking on links your mother sends you, Kelly Wine.
Oh. She's not my real mother. I don't know who that is. My number three was also Abyss. Can I just say one thing?
Sure.
I picked the Ed Harris scene because that part where he's, like, typing and he's kind of losing his mind.
Oh, the end of the Abyss?
That part's good. You don't like that part? Because he's going super down. He doesn't think he's coming back.
Not really, because he does come back and it kind of ruins it all.
No, because you go, oh, she came back, so they wouldn't screw it. James Cameron, the awesome James Cameron, wouldn't screw us twice, so you actually think he's going to die. And then Chris Elliott shows up and saves. But
thanks, James Cameron.
Yeah. Well, I just said Abyss, so can I have both those moments, even though it's three moments, or do I have to put Abyss twice?
Well, actually, it is. Dingus wanted us to pick moments and not just movies, so...
No,
you're saying mine's don't.
Because what you made me realize is that I was quoting the line from the wrong scene. The line comes from your scene, I think.
The mouth scene.
Where, you know, we breathe water right. For 9 months, where Bruce Willis has to do that. And where she, and I haven't seen Abyss for so long, how do they drown her?
It fills up with water. The submarine is flooding. They're trapped under in this
right.
submarine. And they just let it fill up, and he, you know, I'm not sure if it actually shows her drowning or if it just cuts to him pulling her body along when he's swimming back.
No. I seem to remember him watching her and holding her head.
Yeah, you're right.
And that's,
well, he brings her back to life by yelling at her.
Yeah, he calls her a stone-cold bitch or something. That's how he brings her back to life, which is, you know,
that's
telling.
That's part of CPR training.
It's like they're still married.
But I do love that moment, at least as I remember it, of him holding her. While she's gulping down water.
Yeah.
I heard Ed Harris's wedding ring in that movie cost more than your car.
That's Glenn Ross.
Oh, Ed Harris, thanks, David Mamet.
Dickus, what is your number three trapped underwater moment?
Should I stop getting quotes? Because I think Kelly gets really impatient with me.
What? No, I like them.
I like them because I get them all. That. I'm so good at this game.
It's the only part of the podcast I like. It's your quotes. Because you're a good actor, unlike some people on a podcast. I don't want to know. I didn't do drugs in real life. Research.
I can do lines from Mad Max. I mean Road Warrior. In accent and everything. Don't make me do that, because I will.
You were convincing he's gay, too, on The Office.
How dare you.
Dude, I wish this... I don't think this category will yield any Mad Max quotes, but it's... And that's too bad.
Because she's not trapped underwater in the Australian desert until the third movie.
Well, we'll see what Tom Hardy has to bring to the table.
Let's hear the quote, Dingus.
Yeah.
I just suck at the game, so I feel incompetent because I'm not a good quote rememberer, even though it's kind of a writing thing to know that stuff. Idiot.
It's a mindless thing, actually. It's wasting memory cells.
Glub, glub, glub.
Yeah, that's the quote, glub, glub, glub. It's from Finding Nemo. Here's the quote. You don't get to pick when you tell the truth. The truth is beyond that.
Rushmore.
It's someone being tortured, being waterboarded. I give up.
Syriana.
All right, the money quote from the end of the film that will probably help you get it is this. Don't lose your way. Let me sleep. Just let me sleep.
I haven't seen it, whatever it is.
All right, it's from a film I saw last week in preparation for our podcast.
Oh, I did, right. Because you even told me, Dingus, there were no trapped underwater moments in that movie. You lied.
Which movie?
Dead Calm?
No. It was preparing for the movie before this week, last week. And this is from the movie Insomnia. The 2002 version directed by Christopher Nolan.
Who gets trapped underwater?
He does when he's out of the law, under the logs and stuff.
Yes.
Oh.
And this is what brought this category to mind for me, because it's such a startling and amazing moment, at least for me. And it's this character Will Dorman, played by Al Pacino, who's really difficult, chasing Walter Finch, who's played by Robin Williams, He's trying to catch this suspect in this crime, and he's chasing him across town or the outskirts of town, and he's going over this logging area where they've driven all these logs. I would guess down the river to the point where they're going to put them on trucks. And all the logs are jammed into this area right there at the in the harbor or whatever you call it. I'm totally screwing up the terms because I don't know how to describe this, but they're running across logs that are on water, and they're huge logs, and you get the sense as they're running, because through the filming of this, you see Al Pacino's feet a lot in these running scenes. You see him like going through other water. You see him misstepping, and you get the sense that he's just not really certain of his footing through a lot of this movie. And as it goes on, he gets less and less certain because he doesn't sleep at all. And so he's running over these logs, and it looks like a swamp. And for me, I wasn't assuming there was deep water underneath. I just wasn't thinking that way. I was just watching a chase. And he's chasing over these logs, and all of a sudden he just disappears because the logs separate and he goes underwater. And then your perspective immediately shifts to him underwater under these logs. And the sound design in this scene is phenomenal because you get the sense of how huge these trees are and that there's no way a person can get out of that, that they're constantly shifting, constantly moving. At one point, he gasps for breath, goes back down, and this log just rams into another one with this sound of like a freight train crashing. And as I watched this, it's not a big part of the movie. It's just a little sequence. But this sense of being trapped under this, and you can see the surface but not get to it, and I just thought, there's no way to get out of that. How would you ever get out of that? And it really, really got to me.
It's like a nightmare. It's like a nightmare. It's more nightmarish than anything in Inception. It's like that would have been a cool level in Inception.
Yeah, it is absolutely nightmarish. That's a great way to put it, Kelly Wand.
Why don't you just swim to the left or the right of the log?
They're everywhere, dude.
Oh.
We'll go a little farther left or right.
That's right. There were only two logs there. Why didn't he just... It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Why didn't he roll? All right, I'm going to choose...
It sounds a lot like that.
I'm choosing Free Willy instead.
Sounds like that scene in Robin Hood where he's between two boats and they're going to mush him. Is it like that?
It's a girl between two cups.
Tom, that's not a bad that's not a bad analog, actually. If you remember the sound and the feeling of those boats crashing together, except the stakes there were nil. There's no feeling that he was. You know, I mean, but this goes on, and it's like. All the surface is covered with boats. There would be no way to get your head above water.
Right.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. You're
oh, I see what you're saying. It's in my Robin Hood scene. That's I see. Right.
Right.
Well, my number two is very much like your number three, but it's ice instead of logs, and it has that nightmarish quality. And I couldn't find this. It's not on Instant Watch or anything. I haven't seen it in forever. I only remember it from when I was a kid. But it's a scene in The Omen 2.
Damn it! I hate you so much.
Where somebody falls down underneath the ice, and the current pulls them away from the hole where they fell down. And there's kids, there's people running along the ice, seeing him under the water. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Kelly Wand, you can remind me, are there shots from his point of view under the ice?
Yes.
Oh, my God, that's just, like, so scary.
It's horrifying.
As a kid. Yeah.
Yeah. That one stayed with me, too, and you suck for scooping me twice.
Now, who, I don't remember, like, in the context of the movie, it's just somebody who finds out that he's the Antichrist, or who falls under the water? Do you remember the...
His friend or his enemy? One of those. I get those two words mixed up.
So it's not a stranger. It's not somebody he's never met before.
It's someone who's being a dick to him and doesn't know he's the devil. Like everyone in the movie.
And are they playing, are they playing like hockey or something? Or they're just goofing?
Yeah, they're playing hockey on the ice. But I forget why the ice cracks besides Satan is fire-powered and just breaks it under.
All you need. Satan can do that.
Do you remember the part in the movie where he's in Lance Henriksen is like his mentor in that movie?
I forgot that Lance Henriksen was in that. I was looking on YouTube for clips, and I saw the clip that I remembered where the history teacher drills him.
Yes.
I love that scene. Yeah, that's a great scene. And then Lance shows up at the end, and I was like, whoa.
It's just you're showing off.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like he knows he's the devil. The army is in on it. I love that.
Well, isn't Lance Henriksen supposedly, I don't remember, but I'm presuming he's like a cultist who's helping guide his upbringing.
And he's like a general.
I think they're in just ROTC or something.
But he's got bars on his epaulets or whatever.
ROTC general.
Yeah.
And then in the third one, I mean, Damien's like the Secretary of State or something, so we can assume that Lance Henriksen like wrote him a good recommendation. Let's go make a good Secretary of State.
So that's
a great movie.
Is that movie totally scary and horrifying, or was I just really young at the time?
I cannot imagine that even the original Omen isn't goofy.
It's got to be.
Well, the thing
there's
is,
no girls in Omen 2. It's like he's pubescent, but there's no love interest. Am I wrong?
Wait, you said, kind of, I don't remember.
You can't imagine the original isn't goofy.
Right.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that the Omen movies hold up. See, here's the thing.
Okay.
Rosemary's Baby is awesome because it's not about a demon kid. It's about the insecurity of being pregnant and your child coming. And, you know, it's everything in Rosemary's Baby is implied. But the Omen, once you actually have a little kid looking evil on this scene, unless you play it like something like Joshua, like the Omen, isn't that stuff just silly? Like where he's got the 666 on his forehead and the glass.
It's less scary to me than the second one for some reason. Because in the second one, it is him. And you can't tell whether he knows or not. And everyone dies horribly. There's like just a ton of horrifying deaths, like that dude in the elevator.
Well, no, I remember. Oh, that's right, the elevator, and I remember the nanny
cut
itself in front of all the kids. Like,
yeah, and the woman gets her eye pecked out at the beginning, like his grandma.
But see, I remember.
I hate that kid.
Those are scary though, and those are just cool deaths. Like, I think there's something inherently silly about this idea that like Satan has cultists and they're going to raise an antichrist kid. Like, that just seems goofy to me.
And the only solution is this ancient knife.
right, exactly. Isn't it William Holden who's, like, trying to stab him in a church?
The second one. No, that's Gregory Peck on the first
Gregory
one.
Peck. Oh, good Lord. Yeah, good call.
Yeah.
That's right, Atticus Finch.
That's
not very good parenting skill.
And David Warner gets his head cut off.
Yeah, by a pane of glass. That's right. I don't know. Maybe The Omen is good, but I can't imagine 2 and 3 aren't so.
Well, they were cool because, like, Satan never shows up, but you can just get the sense you can't do anything about it. They're kind of like Final Destination, where you're just kind of jacked, and they're just fatalistic. Like, you can't beat him. You want to stay on his good side at all times, even though he's a total dick.
Doesn't 3, though, with Sam Neill as the Secretary of Defense or whatever, isn't he trying to cause a nuclear war? And doesn't he does somebody stop him?
Yeah, some woman stabs him. But there's some horrifying deaths in that, too. Like, a woman, she kills her baby with an iron, because there's, like, some kind of...
Yikes.
I know.
Which one has baboons...
They don't make movies like that anymore. What? Yeah.
Which one has baboons attacking a car? It's like Cujo, but with baboons.
That's Jumanji, Tom.
No. No. It's like Cujo, but with baboons. I'm telling you guys. One of them...
That might be my favorite quote of all these times.
Which Omen movie has baboons?
I swear.
Which one has baboons? It's like
I swear.
You guys, a listener will prove you right, I predict.
Yeah, one of the Omen.
You guys don't remember the baboons from Omen 2?
How can you not remember that? They're in a car and baboons attack the car. I can't believe you guys remember that.
In my country so far? Where would that even happen?
Is it a Michael Crichton film with Laura Linney in it?
You guys, all right. Someone will vindicate
me. If you're right, I will eat crow. Just like Damien's grandma.
There's one with ferrets, I think, too. Ferrets attacking a bicycle.
It's Beastmaster.
Taps into our fears of gerbils.
All right, so Omen 2 was also, that was your number 2 pick, huh, Kelly Wand? So you're listening.
That's such a great one. I'm so upset that you scooped me twice. If only I'd gone first.
All right, Dingus, now that Kelly Wand is rendered almost entirely superb.
If you do my number 1, I'll give you $5. Because it's... I bet you haven't even seen it.
Well, then you're probably safe. Right. Dingus, what is your number 2?
I'm going to give you three lines of dialogue. This is a character exchange. So three lines. Are you ready, guys?
Yep.
All right, here we go. I once told you about a sailor who drowned. Yes, he said it was like going home. I lied. He said it was agony.
Cabin boy.
Perfect Storm.
I actually know this.
Did you say Cabin Boy?
I did, yes.
No one drowns in Cabin Boy. The Chalky shows up.
I know this movie. Oh, this is great. I just can't think of it. I think I even really like this movie, don't I?
Yes,
Open
you
Water
do.
2. Driftwood or whatever it's called.
Oh, Driftwood would have been a great name for Open Water 2. Have you seen Open Water 2, Kelly Wand?
Yeah, it sucks.
It does.
It's got a good premise, though. It's just the characters are horrible. It's not, they didn't do the documentary. I don't know. The whole thing's lame.
So it's not Robin Hood, Dingus.
You're right. It's not Robin Hood, Dingus.
Oh, I know this quote. It's an excellent quote. Rats. Okay, what's the actor who says the line about lying about the sailor drowning being like going home?
That would be the excellent Michael Caine.
Well, you haven't seen Harry Brown, so I know it's not that. No. Oh, rats.
Jaws of Revenge.
It's not.
I'm thinking of
Michael
Caine.
Well, no one's trapped underwater in Dark Knight. Oh, good Lord. What?
Death Trap.
Is it Harry Brown?
No.
That one where he's wearing glasses and he's a spy.
Here's another quote for you guys.
Get Carter.
No one cares about the man in the box, the man who disappears.
Oh, you know what? I was gonna rewatch it to see if I wanted to pick it.
Yeah,
I forgot to rewatch it. Oh, good Lord. Good pick.
That's a good one.
All right, people listening, if you haven't watched The Prestige and you intend to watch it at any point in the near future, stop listening to me right now.
I think that ship sailed.
Yeah, I think it has too. This moment in The Prestige, because so far I've got two Chris Nolans going in my favor, is just shocking to me and terrifying to me. When the way Hugh Jackman plays that moment where Christian Bale is trying to break him out, I love that moment. It is just freaking terrifying to me. So those two moments that I watched this week, I started to wonder, does Christopher Nolan have a water fetish? So it's The Prestige.
So does Shyamalan.
Hey, you're going to scoop my number one, Kelly Wand.
No, I'm not. Oh, wait, maybe I will.
You also made me, I screwed up and I wasn't going to pick The Omen 2. I left off one of mine, so rats.
What?
All right, well, I've got a runner-up that I meant to put on my list.
My runners-up are better than my list. Spoiler alert.
Well, we'll get to them. Okay, well, I'm going to go to my number one. Prestige is good. Man, I keep meaning to rewatch that. I've only seen it once. And
it's good.
You have to rewatch it. Yeah, I did. I did rewatch it right after watching Insomnia. And it rewards. It's a rewarding film for repeat viewings.
I'm an illusionist apologist.
You're the only one.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yep.
You guys are terrible. Come on. What's wrong with the illusionists?
How about crap?
Yeah, exactly.
I like all those old-timey movies.
Is that what that is?
Yeah. What's the one with Gilbert and Sullivan and the me?
Topsy-turvy.
Yeah.
That's not an old-timey movie. That's a Mike Lee movie. It's a very different thing.
Even if it wasn't Mike Lee, because it's old times. It's 1890s. There should be a sex comedy set in the 1890s. That's what I'm going to write and pitch.
When does Emmanuel take place?
In space?
By the way, so I don't, Dingus, I told Dingus this, you can see when somebody's watching something on Xbox Live, if they're watching something from their Netflix queue. Actually, never mind, I'm not going to, Dingus, Dead Calm is not your number one, is that correct?
And what they're watching?
Yeah, you can see.
That is correct.
That's okay. Intrusive.
Because I saw that Dingus was watching Dead Calm, and I was like, oh, he's looking for underwater scenes. But it was.
He was just looking at Nicole Kidman nude.
Ah, that's
right. Hard to find.
Well, I also noticed
it's so sexy watching her get raped. It really is.
Dingus, you kept watching. I kept seeing that you were watching the Emmanuel movies too. Was that for what were you researching for?
Yeah, let's do it. What's up with that?
I've got a list coming up about sex in Zero G, and I was hoping there was something there.
Emmanuel trapped underwater. 3.
By the way, Kelly,
she's really wet in that one.
You love The Illusionist. Paul Giamatti in that? Come on.
Paul Giamatti in anything that's not...
You guys hate him in everything. You hated him in John Adams, and I like him in everything.
I love him. I just don't think he can pull off period like that. It's
maybe there was that one Paul Giamatti guy back in the old times. and he would have won. I lived for nothing. Dingus doesn't appreciate.
Although to really understand Paul Giamatti, I mean, yeah, part of the problem is he doesn't do history well, but you really need to see him in Lady in the Water to really see the full range of Paul Giamatti's body of work.
I don't see Shyamalan movies that have anything to do with water.
All right.
But all the other ones I've seen.
All right, well, I'm going to pick my number one. Are you guys ready for this?
Yeah, you got me on this one, I'm betting.
Really?
Okay.
Well, this one I almost didn't think of as being trapped underwater, but it absolutely is. And it's the final scene of the movie, and it's so crucial to what's going on in the movie, and it's such great payoff, and the way it's shot is just so, it's one of the most unforgettable scenes I've ever seen. And it's the final scene, the penultimate scene in Let the Right One In.
Yeah, you crap head.
Well, I was like, that there's so much about.
I forgot about that.
Because so much of what's important in that scene, you don't see. The being trapped underwater part is almost like being excluded from what's actually going on, and the dramatic impact of the decisions that have been made, and the and just how that's shot. It really is. It's just the way that you can't see what's going on, but you see a limb dragged through the water, and the severed body part. Is it a head or what? Anyway, I was
left. Leg.
It's a leg.
A leg, yeah.
A wing. Maybe it's a wing.
Oh, but it's the hand that ends up being severed that's holding him down.
Right.
If I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
He's got it good being trapped underwater. That's what makes that scene fun for me.
And I can't wait to see how they do it in the remake.
You can't say that with a straight face.
I seriously am curious. Because I think the remake is at this point so creatively bankrupt and misguided.
Yeah, that's true. The first thing I thought of when I heard about the remake was, I wonder how they'll screw up the underwater scene.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the best scene in the original.
And Digus, this one almost didn't occur to me. I mean, it's when the 3x3s, like the way I do these is I'll sort of look over the shelf of the movies that I own or the posters that I have in my house. And I was sitting in my dining room. Where I've got immediately to my right hand a Let the Right One In poster. And I'm just kind of like sitting there, like looking up, thinking of movies. Gaze sort of wanders over to the right. I'm like, oh, yeah, of course. Because it's not trapped in a, I mean, there's nothing,
right.
Like there's furniture on top of him, or he's in a car that's sunk or anything like that.
No, but he's absolutely trapped underwater.
Right.
It's like you stay underwater for 3 minutes. If you can do it, I'll just nick you. If you can't, I'll poke out one of your eyes. Mm-hmm. And there's totally that sense. And that is my number one, of course. And the way it's shot, not knowing anything, only knowing what's going on from his world under there, is perfect. It's perfectly shot. And it's one of those moments. It's one of the moments of the last few years, if not forever, that is just this perfect little moment. I love that moment. I remember when we saw it and just being so just breathless from watching it.
And I wonder
it's
too,
an iconic if, scene.
Aha, it is. And I wonder too if it's from the book or if it's something that the director brought to the table. I don't know.
The solution to a problem that we don't have enough money to show this special effect sequence, so we're going to do it this way. And that's the kind of thing I love. And I don't know if that's actually, if it's written that way, beautiful. But it has the feel of somebody trying to say, how do we get around something, and then being brilliant.
Well, you know, Dingus, I would be inclined to agree with you, Dingus, but they had a lot of money. Well, not a lot of money, but they had enough CG to do those goofy cats and to show her, like, climbing up the side of a building and stuff like that. So it does have the feel of that, but I really don't think that's what's going on. I mean, I think they easily could have shown her dragging people over the water, doing wire work or whatever, and the director just knew this moment is about Oscar's perspective.
Right.
And I just think it's so clearly a creative choice. But you're right. I could see in a movie that had fewer resources or didn't have the CG, I could see that being forced. But I really feel that the director just knew that that was the right thing to do at this moment.
I'm glad you said that. Yeah, that's a good point. I'm glad you said that. Because those moments you said, the cats and her catching on fire, were moments that were, for me, a little bit like, I don't need that. And I think you're right. Yeah, it's good. I'm glad you said that.
And I am not at all lying. I'm not being the least bit facetious when I say I cannot wait to see the American remake. I am so convinced.
Yes, you are.
I mean, I think it's going to be awful, but I, as a fan of movies, I sometimes enjoy seeing awful movies. I mean, there's something to learn from terrible movies, I feel.
I agree with you, but this one will be a tough sell for me.
I really? Like, come on. You can't. Kelly Wan, surely you want to see.
It'll just annoy me.
Okay.
It'll be like an American. It'll be like Grudge 2. I'll just go, or The Ring 2. It'll be like watching The Ring 2.
All right.
I'll just go, ugh. Here we are. Look at these stupid maps. You looked better last movie. Somehow. Same thing. Totally lame somehow.
Now, Kelly Wan, does this mean you will not go see Let Me In?
I will fight and lose the fight. I'll whine like I usually do.
Oh no, I don't necessarily think we need to see it for the podcast. I mean, there might be something better that week to see, but I will definitely go see that movie.
I'll see it on cable so I can mention it to you guys before a podcast. Go, oh, if I only saw it. That's my plan. I predict you will make us see it because it'll be some slow week.
Could be. And also, I love Chloe Moritz and Richard Jenkins. I mean,
I do too.
Just for those two actors, I will go see movies for actors, even if I think they're bad movies.
But the scene you're talking about is the kind of thing that you never see in American movies, and that's one of the things that made that movie awesome, was it wasn't a Hollywood piece of shit.
And by the way, at a Comic-Con panel that was just held, it is confirmed that all of the stuff about Eli's gender is missing from the remake.
Of course.
Yep.
Elliot, they even said that on the panel.
Yeah, she's Chloe.
Don't worry, we took out that thing.
Well, Chloe Moritz talked about how they came up with, this was on a blog post I read from someone covering in the panel, but Chloe Moritz apparently talked about how they came up with backstory for her character, and she was very much like a young girl, and there's apparently more of a love story between, like, it's more of a conventional boy meets girl kind of thing with her and Cody Smith McPhee sort of falling in love.
My Twilight.
Exactly.
Are they going to prom together?
You know, I think that's what they should have called the movie instead of Let Me In. They should have called it High Twilight.
It's a shame they didn't have anything to draw on to find her backstory. But it's good that they did the footwork, right, since there was nothing there. I'm staying in tonight.
Yeah. Well, Tom, you didn't like that shot, I thought, in the original. Like, you found it distracting or something.
Disturbing. Disturbing.
Yeah, well, that's good. Disturbing equals good. Distracting.
I agree. Yes, I agree.
Well, and which one was it? Disturbing, the good one.
Most times a movie does something disturbing, just because I'm so inured to what movies usually do to disturb me, I do count that as a good thing, yes.
Yeah, what about when Angelina Jolie has a penis and it's not a vampire? What's that do for you?
I don't think she had male parts. She was just, like, dressed.
No, she had to get through the metal detector. She had a fake penis.
Because in case they did, like, a full body scan like they're doing at Airbnb.
Yeah.
Good point. Very good point.
And there's that great Spinal Tap moment where she takes a cucumber out of her pants.
All right, so, Kelly, you're the only one left. Did I scoop you for your number one? Do you owe me five?
No.
All right. So what?
I knew you would pick this one.
What is it, Zapped?
No. Zapped is more of a winter activity for three bedrooms. Okay, here's a line from it, even though I don't remember hardly any of the dialogue. I'm just trying to – you guys are good at guessing lines, and listeners are good at being bored. So here we go. Mares eat oats, and does eat oats, and little lambs eat ivy. A kid will eat ivy too, wouldn't you?
Why didn't you sing that? Is it Cabin Fever?
No, Chris Elliott movies.
Peaks?
Eeks was your guess? Beaks?
Pigs?
Twin Peaks. Twin Peaks.
Peaks.
Fire Walk With Me? No, that was about fire.
Did someone famous say the line, Kelly Wand?
Yes.
Who was it?
I think it was Vincent D'Onofrio. I mean, it was Vincent D'Onofrio.
So one of those, like, Bone Collector movies? Is it something with Ashley Judd and Morgan Freeman?
No, I don't watch those. Although you'll probably go, oh, but this is...
Toys. Vincent D'Onofrio with someone trapped underwater.
Adventures in Babysitting?
Wow, maybe you guys didn't see this. I'm impressed. I finally saw something you didn't see.
All right, what is it? I give up.
You guys never saw Jennifer Lopez's best movie?
The Cell.
The Cell?
Yay!
I remember very little of that. Someone gets trapped underwater?
He traps women underwater and drowns them for 40 hours. Like, that's his fetish, which I can relate to.
Wow.
JK. Except for the last part, the relate part. No, and then, I don't know. It's like the idea of being drowned really slowly. I'm terrified of the water.
How do you drown someone really slowly?
Well, she's in a tank, and... Right? It's like the computers in Salt. They just, you know, they take as long as the hero needs to be saved, basically.
But wait, once the water hits your mat, like, they're just in a bath until the water, like, rises to the level to drown them?
Yeah.
Well, that's...
But you know,
really slowly. I mean, you're not drowning until the water is up to your mouth or your, and actually technically up to your nose.
You're trapped underwater eventually, and the first one dies.
All right, I just
thought that's to be the moment.
I take issue with it being slow, though.
We'll put it this way: you're not only being drowned slowly, but a guy with like jumper cables on his nipples and wearing leather pants is watching you with a hard on. Like, isn't that even worse? Like, oh, can't you just wait till I'm dead at least? Because I have two fears: drowning and whatever else I just said.
And hard-ons.
Yeah, and hard-ons. And when they're combined, I know my body will remember because I was in the womb for 9 months.
You know, go ahead, Singer.
I was going to ask if he liked The Cell.
I love The Cell. Okay. You know why? Because I like movies that aren't like anything else I've seen, which is why Inception kind of worked for me more than Tom. Mm-hmm. It's just because it was, we'll never see it again. And Watchmen, too. And The Cell. The three movies that have everything in common.
Did you see The Fall by any chance?
I wanted to. I'm a big fan of Tarsem.
Well, you're not much of a big fan of Tarsem if you haven't seen The Fall.
Well, he's only made, what, two movies, and they both have The in it? I want to. I just couldn't find any, you know, I wasn't, I don't know. I didn't know you guys yet. I was too scared to go to the movies alone. I've learned a lot.
Well, if you enjoyed The Cell, you're in for a treat when you finally get around to seeing
it. You like it better than The Fall? It took him 6 years between movies.
I like The Fall.
So it must be good.
Yeah.
You like The Fall way better.
Not way better, but I like what he's doing in The Fall way better than what he's trying to do in The Cell, I think. Yeah. It's a lot less conventional. If you like The Cell because it's unconventional, then The Fall is him going full tilt with the unconventional part.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, then I should see it. I'm not a good person.
And there's nobody with a hard-on and battery cables on his nipples in The Fall, so you won't be scared.
You don't like those movies? That's not what you told me before the podcast.
What movie? Oh, the battery. I don't think I've seen
it. You've changed. You've changed. Well, that's my number one. My runner's-up for Superior. Poseidon?
I remember they're in a duct, and they're trying to...
There's a Kurt Russell part. Yeah.
Oh, well, at the end. I mean, Poseidon is all about... It's not a moment trapped underwater. That's a whole movie about being trapped underwater, as it were.
Yeah, but there's... okay.
Well, there's a scene where they're trying to climb up a duct, and it's like a little tight, narrow area, and it's filling up with water from beneath, and they get to the top, and there's a grate that won't let them out.
Right.
And they have to use somebody's necklace to unscrew it or something. But I remember that part.
Okay.
So the
Sunshine, does that count?
Sunshine.
Remember where Chris Evans...
In that freezing Nike stuff? Is he trapped?
Yeah. That's why I took it off my number two, and then he ruined it with the Oban too. But that was kind of trapped underwater. Because he has to keep going under it, so in a way he's trapped till he finishes rewiring the whatchamacallit machine.
He's no more trapped than Kurt Russell at the end of Poseidon.
Who's trapped?
No, when you elect to go down there.
All right, Mr. Polysyllabic.
The one that I meant to put on my list, and I want to take The Omen off because I rewatched this. It's so part and parcel of this movie's tone. But there's a scene in the middle of Get Carter, the original one with Michael Caine, where if you've seen Get Carter, it starts as a conventional revenge drama where this guy's coming back to the town he's from and he's gonna kick some ass, and it's Michael Caine, and it's such great fantastic 70s cinema, and he plays a completely morally bereft character.
Mm-hmm.
It's the sort of thing you could only do in the 70s, and mm-hmm. there's a great scene where as what you think has happened turns into something else. That actually affects him in a different way. He takes the woman through
Ridiculous.
He found out that this had happened, and he's not sure what he's going to do with her, but he's just completely flipped out, and he takes her car, and he's going to go resolve the situation, and he puts her in the trunk of the car. Like, just, I can't deal with you, I'm just going to put you in the trunk of the car. And he goes somewhere to kick some bad guy's ass, and he gets in a little shootout. And the shootouts in this movie are kind of cool because they're not, you know, bad guys don't tend to get killed. Like, people run off. They don't want to get shot. When a gun comes out, people leave. It's that kind of movie, which is kind of cool. But when the bad guys leave here, he does actually shoot one of them. They push his car into the water,
mm-hmm.
not knowing she's in the trunk. and he couldn't care less. His lack of reaction to the car being pushed into the water with this woman pinned in the trunk is just amazing, and it's so indicative of this movie's tone. What Mike Hodges did with this sort of 70s, it doesn't even have to be British. It could easily be an American 70s crime drama, like a Taxi Driver kind of movie. So I meant to put that on my list, is The Girl in the Trunk and Get Carter.
Oh, you see his face though, like there's a close-up of his disinterest.
Yeah. I mean, he definitely, like, his lack of reaction is a reaction. I mean, the movie acknowledges that. But the movie, nothing is ever said about this, though, by the way. If you're not watching the movie closely, it's easy to miss very important things, like the main twist I'm talking about, which I don't want to say, and like the fact that there was a woman in that car. You know, if you miss the one shot where he puts her in the trunk, you know, the movie never lingers on that fact or reminds us of that. It's such a throwaway thing.
There's no shots of her in the trunk struggling, or even, you just have to remember she's in the trunk.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah.
It's very subdued.
So that's what I meant to pick instead of Omen 2. Deadgummit. All right, what other runners-up?
That reminded me of a good one, but I forget it. Alien Resurrection, which I hate to put on a list of any kind.
Are they trapped, though, or isn't it more like Sunshine? You elect to go under the water.
Well, they get trapped for a few minutes by the egg. There's like they come up where they think it's like the grading thing,
right?
It's the same stupid shit.
Like they can't go back the way they've come too far to go back, and they're trapped at a dead end or something.
Yeah. Then they're not trapped because they shoot a fire launcher, and then that's apparently fire's the cure to water.
It does come water, yes.
It's in the future though, where that makes more sense. Unbreakable. He's in the pool. Does that count? Because water is his kryptonite, even though, you know, we're made of water, basically.
I forgot about that. I forgot about that part of the... That's right, the M. Night Shyamalan.
He gets tangled up in a tarp, and then some kids get him on a hook, and that's his superpower, is getting rescued on the hook.
All right.
Does Jaws count?
When is anybody trapped, though? Brody, is it when
Cooper.
Brody's in the...
That's, in the cage.
Somebody mentioned that to me, and I don't think that works. Is he trapped?
He's trapped. He's trapped. He has to wait for Quint to die and the shark to get blown up, and then he can come up.
He's kind of, I don't know that he's trapped so much as he's loitering.
Yeah. Till he sees how shit plays out. Well, Brody will 50-50. It's a shark or Brody, yeah. Red Planet, even though it's space.
Space, no one can hear you drown?
Yeah. It's like space is water in that movie. Tim Robbins part. And Beer Fest. It's another one of mine.
Well, you gotta elaborate. I don't think Dingus or I have seen Beer Fest.
What? You guys don't see movies with boobs in them?
Not that we talk about.
There's a part where the fat dude of... Did you guys see Super Troopers?
Is that the boobs part you're talking about?
Never mind. The listeners will know. What are your runners up? I gotta recite the whole. Well, yeah, I go okay, yeah, and then there's some beer, and it's beer instead of water, but beer has water in it.
All right, okay.
And so does space. So take that, Red Planet, laughers.
So I remember as a kid, and I've looked for this movie. I don't know what it is. There's a horror movie about like a house that comes alive, and I remember a couple of scenes. I remember there's one where there's a girl in a shower, and the walls of the shower start closing in like they're going to smush her. And you know what? I may have never even seen the movie. I might have only seen a trailer. But the one that I'm thinking of is there's a dude who jumps into a swimming pool, and then the surface of the swimming pool won't let him up out of the pool. It's kind of like the Omen 2 under the ice scene, but this haunted, like possessed house pins
the water's on it.
It's like the whole house and the water. And I thought for the longest time it was a movie called Burnt Offerings with Oliver Reed, Karen Black.
Yeah.
But it's not.
Right.
It's not that, though. Burnt Offerings does have a similar scene where Burnt Offerings, by the way, is kind of like a pre-Shining Shining.
Mm-hmm.
It's about these people who go to this house and it starts to drive them crazy. And when Oliver Reed starts to go crazy, he's horsing around with his son in the swimming pool. And he starts, like, freaking out and, like, dunking him and holding him under the water too long. And Betty White plays the grandmother, and she's on the side going, oh, what are you doing? Stop that. Oh, let it breathe. And Oliver Reed just playing like crazy dude, you know, holding this kid underwater. And I remember that kind of freaking me out as a kid. But it's not the one where the guy dives in the pool and can't get out.
What about The Final Destination, where the guy's in the
boat? Oh, that's right. That's trapped underwater. That's right. The guy gets sucked into the little suction system at the bottom of the pool. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's in there with 40 other people who all ignore him. The camera doesn't.
Right, until his innards get sucked out. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's gross.
That's death paying off all those other people to look the other way.
Yeah. Dingus, what are your punches up?
Save the podcasting.
I was thinking of Ice Ones. I'm not familiar with the Omen 2 Electric Boogaloo. Or
racist.
Or I think you put it as the Omen 2 Under the Ice. But I couldn't remember if Dead Zone actually has a moment where he's trapped under the ice. Do you guys remember that?
The TV show?
I don't remember either. No, Tom.
No, the movie, it seems to me that the story... Some part of his upbringing is that there's a scene where the kids are playing hockey on a pond, and somebody goes through the ice and gets trapped under. But I can't.
That's
I
in the book, though, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I couldn't think of, Kelly. Whether what
it
I was
that
doing
for the movie.
Was
I think.
All right.
Because in the book, it's like which one made it happen, and in the movie, they go, "All right, forget that."
Okay. Then I started thinking about The Sweet Hereafter, but there's no real perspective on that.
Yeah. Sweet Hereafter, the bus just goes under and then we're done.
Yeah. But it's an incredible shot. It's just this, it's gone. That's it. But the one that sticks with me from my childhood is this old submarine movie called Gray Lady Down.
Oh, with Christopher Reeves.
Yeah, well, that's it. I think that might be one of his first, if not his first appearances, and Charlton Heston. And I remember seeing it with my dad and just being just chilled by there's a moment, I think, where the sub gets crushed by the pressure of the water on it.
Like in the core.
And my dad sort of had to explain to me why that would happen, the physics of that, why water has that kind of power and weight to it, because I just, as a kid, I just didn't understand what was going on, but it made an impression on me, that movie, and I've never seen it since then, but I just always think of that, as whenever I think of submarine movies. I mean, we've talked about other submarine movies, but I really have this fond little place in my heart for this old submarine movie.
Yeah, I want to see Grey Lady Down again. That's a good one, Dingus.
I've never seen it. I want to. I like sub movies.
Do you know, originally, in The Sweet Hereafter, the bus, instead of crashing into the ice, was going to be attacked by baboons? I don't know if you guys know that.
I remember that now. That would have made a much better movie.
No one's going to get that. Oh, wait. Yeah, they will. Seems like forever ago.
In this dream, it's been 10 years.
Now, what level are we on?
All right, are you guys ready for next week's 3x3? I don't really know how to phrase this. It's
the deep and Into the Blue also. Okay, go.
Oh, is Into the Blue the Paul Walker one?
Yes.
Yeah, right. Oh, that's a good one. That's a good
your
one.
Favorite MILF or BILF.
Is there anything in Deep Blue Sea, too? Because I didn't get to see that again.
I don't think there's a trapped underwater so much as sharks.
There's the part where LL Cool J is in that stove, but he's trapped by a shark and water. Which is a totally different category.
Yeah, good point.
What's the trapped underwater in the deep? Is it when Lou Gossett Jr. gets, like, pinned by a moray eel? Or what's the trapped underwater bit?
Don't be racist.
I didn't direct it.
Oh. I forget. I think she gets her leg stuck. Jacqueline Bisset.
Ah.
And Nick Nolte and Eddie Murphy are up
top. There is lots of underwater peril. Yeah.
Sure. That's what I thought we meant. Just movies that take place underwater at all.
That sounds like a rating, one of those rating things.
PG-13 for underwater peril. Yeah. All right, here's next week's 3x3. You guys ready for this? Now, I'm going to take a few things off the table, which I probably shouldn't do because I'm also then not leaving myself any picks.
But you're not a noob.
I'll come up with something before next week. What inspired this is Dingus in our Inception podcast mentioned what he felt was a missed opportunity where we could have had a character speaking in Japanese, whereas everyone else is speaking in English.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was in that context that we talked about the opening scene of, in, well, maybe not. The opening scene of Inglourious Basterds comes to mind, too, where Christopher Waltz says to the dairy farmer, do you mind if we speak in English? And that sets up this whole new layer where only certain characters know what's being said, and the people under the floorboards don't know what's being said, and there's all this subtext. So what I want for next week's 3x3 are the best uses of another language in a
scene. Oh, my God.
So, for instance, the Inglourious Basterds bit. Of course, this gets used a lot, like in spy movies or whatever, where you know that the guy is trained in another language. I'm thinking of, like, Robert De Niro speaking Thai in Meet the In-Laws. You know, that's, like, a common thing.
Meet the In-Laws.
And there's also a great scene, so I'll also take this off the table, in The 13th Warrior, where, exactly how it works, but we zoom in on somebody speaking another language, and then we zoom out and he's speaking English to somehow represent Antonio Banderas learning the language.
It by listening to them, yeah.
Exactly. So those are three instances right there of another language being used in a movie. So what I want are three best uses of another language. And you can do with that as you want. Those are three examples that I'm taking off the table. But there's still plenty of stuff to pick from.
Does Navi count as a language from Avatar?
I would say yes. I think you just stole one of Dingus's picks. Nice work.
Mm-hmm. You stole all three of them. Thanks. Because it's best use of another language in a scene. So conceivably, I could use the same movie for all three.
All right.
What's I see you mean in English?
Oh, I like how... Well, never mind.
Yeah, I don't want to follow up that, James.
No, I like how Tom's trying to use the follow the kicks up line as an I see you line, but nobody's taking the bait.
I can't... That line is just so indicative. We're not going to talk about Inception.
All right.
No, we're not. That's why I was going to get the
phone. Let's talk about the Star Wars prequels. Something you can all enjoy. Something you never...
I prefer some Lord of the Rings talk. You guys know who's playing David Banner in the new Hulk Avengers?
Yeah, Ruffalo.
I just found out today. Yeah, Ruffalo.
You guys were going to talk about... Oh, you guys are such dorks.
Hey, Vanessa Marsil's coming back on of General Hospital. I saw it on the panel.
I'm waiting for Hunt Block to come back on General Hospital. All right, so there's next week's 3x3. Join us then, those of you listening, for Best Uses of Another Language. Next week we are going to see... Is it Dinner with Schmucks or for Schmucks? Does anyone know?
It's dinner at Schmucks, because they eat at the restaurant Schmucks.
Okay, that's not true. I know it's not that one. It's one of the others.
They eat at Schmucks Diner. And John Shucks in it, that guy from Holmes and Yo-Yo, Tom's favorite actor.
No idea what you're talking about. But next week we will see dinner either with or for Schmucks. I think it's with Schmucks. Join us for that, and join us for our Best Uses of Another Language. I am Tom Chick, and I have been joined by Christian... Mirarki? Did I get that right?
Yes. No, it's Christian Mirarki.
Oh, it's so close. And also Kelly Wand.
I'm gonna be on the next level. I'm gonna be rocking over that bass treble. I'm gonna be chilling with my motherfucker crew. I'ma be making all them drills you wanna do. I'ma be up in that Maylist flicks, doing one-handed flips, and I'ma be sipping on trickers. I'ma be shaking my hips, you gon' be licking your lips. I'ma be taking them pictures, looking all fly and shit. I'ma be the flyest chick. I'ma be spreading my wings. I'ma be doing my thing.
Do it.
Okay. I'ma swing it this way. I'ma. In you, slugs salt Russians.